with us, Fingola Zone. It is Tuesday, November 19th, 2013. This is Deanna Spingola, and this is my new weekly radio program sponsored by the American Free Press, whose website is AmericanFreePress.net. I am a subscriber to the American Free Press and highly recommend a subscription to what is probably the last free speech newspaper in the country. Please visit the American Free Press bookstore for their current listing of JFK assassination-related books. Michael Collins Piper, the author of Final Judgment, an amazing scholarly work on the assassination, will be my guest on my RBN program this Friday. He is working on the updated version of that book, but meanwhile, please consider purchasing False Flags, Template for Terror, another wonderful book. I don't know how he manages to find the time, the energy, and the effort to do all the writing that he does, but I really appreciate his work. And in the meantime, please do go and look at the listing of all the JFK-related books on the website AmericanFreePress.net. My websites are Spingola.com and SpingolaSpeaks.info. Last week's guest on this program was Dennis Wise. Shortly thereafter, YouTube canceled his video channel. And he still has his regular website, which is thegreateststorynevertold.tv. Alrighty, today we are not going to take calls. Please email your questions or comments to comment@spingola.com or visit the chat room and post them there. The chat room is spingola.chatango.com. Our guest today is Dr. David Kennedy. He is the author of How to Save Your Teeth, Toxic-Free Preventive Dentistry, a fabulous, fabulous book. His website is fluoridegate.org. He is the producer of Fluoride Gate, an American tragedy. Dr. Kennedy, welcome to the program. Do we have Dr. Kennedy?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay. Anyway, if you go to his website, it is Fluoride Gate, an American tragedy. You can view the video there. There's no charge to view it. It is a must-watch video. Just the pictures on the website should indicate to you the severity of the situation that we have in America, what with fluoride and with mercury. And his book, it's a wonderful book. It is available even as a PDF file, I believe. And let me give you some background. Dr. David C. Kennedy has practiced dentistry for more than 30 years. He is the past president of the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology, which was formed to review, support, and disseminate research on the suitability of materials and methodologies used in the dental practice. Dr. Kennedy is currently the information officer on fluoride for the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. He is a fabulous person, he is so full of information. He's lectured to dentists, physicians, and other health professionals all over the world on the subjects of preventative dental health, mercury toxicity, and fluoride. He is the author of the book, How to Save Your Teeth, with Toxic-Free Preventive Dentistry, and it provides instruction and insight for both professionals and the layman on how to provide and receive toxic-free dentistry. In 1999, Dr. Kennedy visited villages in Inner Mongolia, where he witnessed the conditions that now afflicts 43 million Chinese children with dental fluorosis, which is pretty awful, 1.6 million Chinese with severe skeletal fluorosis, and an at-risk population in the endemic areas of 100 million, roughly 9% of the entire country. Do we have Dr. Kennedy on yet?
I'm on the call-in line.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Kennedy. All righty. You're there.
I am. I sound pretty impressive. Inner Mongolia is in China.
Yes.
And their government's working actively to reduce their citizens' exposure to fluoride, while ours is working overtime, breaking laws, and behaving in a completely nefarious fashion to increase our exposure to fluoride.
Which
I wonder
is
why.
Terrible. Yes. Why do you think that is?
I think industry has a lot of it to get rid of, and that those industries are good friends with the government. There's fluoride leaking out of every plant that makes aluminum. So if you make airplanes and you leak aluminum, you leak fluoride out of bauxite. So, you know, that's one thing. The nuclear weapons require the extraction of uranium out of high phosphate rock, and that leaks fluoride all over the place. So industry and the government basically have joined together to thwart the forces of democracy. You know, that it's not in the best interest of the public, but it may be in the best interest of an industry, as long as you don't consider human beings necessary for your industry to succeed. And I think that's what's going on. There are some people that go into the conspiracy theory. They're trying to kill us all off and all that stuff. And you know, I can't quite buy that. The same people that bring us the collapsing websites and stuff like that, I can't believe that they'd be organized enough to run a giant conspiracy to knock off the population. But on the other hand, I can't believe that they'd be greedy enough that they would accept money to go ahead and do somebody else's job while they're working for us.
Sure.
And I think that's corruption. It's reaches to the Center for Disease Control and the Oral Health Division of the Public Health Department.
Exactly. Well, just the fact that is going on in China, I mean, you were talking about 100 million people. And
that's natural fluoride. That's natural fluoride, exactly like we have a problem in Colorado and Texas and a little spot in Illinois where natural fluoride damages people. And they're working to reduce it. But our country's trying to cause that problem from one coast to the other. The most undemocratic thing that's ever happened in my recollection in this country is that California, the citizens in California have more than 100 times voted against adding fluoride to their water supply. And yet, because of pressures from the Center for Disease Control, claims of safety from the government, which are not based upon fact, they're based upon myth, they induced our legislature to mandate that we add fluoride to the water supply, just like Kentucky has for the last two decades. And Kentucky has the fewest number of teeth of any state in the union. The people lose their teeth at an earlier age in the highly fluoridated states than they do in the non-fluoridated states. So, you know, come on. Give us a break. There's
exactly.
No science to support it. That's why they won't debate. You know, we have to talk about it on your program because they won't engage in scientific discussion because they don't have anything to say. Every theory that they've come up with about how fluoride might be good has been shot down by studies of animals, for example. If you put one part per million fluoride in the water of a rat, the rat has lesions in its brain, arteries, and kidneys. Do we have people with artery problems, brain problems, and kidney problems in this country? Yeah. Well, if you give a rat, and it takes 20 to 50 times more fluoride to kill a rat than a human, but if you put a rat and expose it to fluoride at exactly the same level that they claim is good for your baby and yourself, that you have a damaged rat. And the damage to the kidney was determined in that experiment that's by Varner. You can look it up on Isaacson Brain Research is where it's published. The
wow.
Damage to the brain was because of the damage to the kidney, a separate damage in and of itself.
Wow. Well, you exposed this in Fluoride Gate, which is a relatively new documentary that reveals the tragedy of how government, industry, and trade associations protect and promote policy known to cause harm to our country and especially to small children who suffer more than any other segment of the population. And on your website, fluoridegate.org. You have pictures, one of a little child, one of an infant, and to have a government knowingly attack I guess you wouldn't say attack, but
it's an attack. It's an assault. It's a chemical assault.
Okay. These vulnerable little people, little children, the future of our country, these little children, to such things, and they do suffer from not just fluorosis, but what other kinds of things, what other toxic kinds of things happen to them?
A huge study just out of Harvard this last year, Sun Guifan, the gentleman that invited me to China in 1999, one of his graduate students is Grandjean, who's a very famous toxicologist from France, who's now an American, I think, in America. They combined to put together a meta-analysis of like 27 studies on fluoride in the water, and showed that it was damaging to the IQ. And, you know, those are high levels. And some of them are not. But it's linear. So the what they showed was the less fluoride the child consumed, the smarter the child was. That's really, really simple. Now, if you can't understand that, maybe you should watch out where you're exposing yourself to fluoride. The less fluoride the child is exposed to, the better their IQ was. And that's across the board, in all of the studies, and there's nothing to counter that. The people that are promoting this go around and say, "Oh, those are Chinese studies." Okay, well, there's some from India, and there's others from many other countries of the world, Bangladesh, and so forth, that have the same problem. But I don't think pointing out deficiencies in somebody else's study. Is the same as doing your own study. And so we're data mining right now. We did data mined California, and we showed that there was no difference in dental care costs in fluoridated, partially fluoridated, and completely non-fluoridated areas of California. So that makes it a fraud to claim a benefit. If you're out selling something, and they're selling a product that's called hydrofluosilicic acid, sodium silica fluoride, if you're out selling something and what you're making are false claims, that leaves you liable for making the False Claims Act under the U.S. Law. There was a big claim just recently, it's being adjudicated, of the company that sold thousands and thousands of miles of water pipe that was not strong enough to withstand water pressure. And it popped, and cities had to spend thousands of dollars to dig these darn things up and replace them. Well, False Claims Act is that they made a claim that was a water pipe, and it didn't work like a water pipe. So they're having to cough back billions of dollars. I think the people that are selling silico fluoride to the water supply, some clever attorney should file a False Claims Act against them and say, you know, if it's going to reduce tooth decay, when does it kick in? You know, after 100 years or 1,000? Because we don't see any effect after 65 years. There's rhetoric saying, oh, wow, it's the best thing since sliced bread. There's no scientific data to show in a reasonable study that's broad-based blinded where the investigators can't fudge the data that there's any benefit whatsoever. And that's what data mining is so useful for. Is that we can go into the computers of the government and extract the dental care costs for all the welfare recipients, and then make any difference where they live. That the costs are the same, regardless of fluoride in the water, no fluoride in the water. It's a fraud, and that it's a fraud that's costing this country lots of money. And I don't mean little amount of money. I'm talking billions, and big billions. You know, they're all upset about the shutdown that they said cost the industry in this country $24 billion. Well, you're spending 10 times that much every year on stupid programs like water fluoridation. You've got, how much would it cost you to have 35 employees and probably 10 staff members, probably 350 people? If you had 350 employees, what do you suppose your annual salary and benefit package is going to run on that? You know, that's the people at the Center for Disease Control, 35 people with probably 10 staff members each. And then you go to the public health department, another 150 people with probably 10 staff members each. Each state in the union, 50 states, with, you know, at least one person and a staff. So, you know, add all that up, you've got a whole lot of people making a whole lot of money that do nothing but harm our country.
Wow.
I think we can recycle that money on, you know, fixing some of the chuck holes like we got here in San Diego.
Right. Oh, they're all over the country, I think, and you can apply that same scenario to bridges and all kinds of infrastructure. But a lot of people think that the CDC is designed to help us, to protect us from various diseases, when in fact they are really perpetrating a fraud against the American people by claiming that fluoride is okay.
They do a lot of other bad things. The people have begun to call it the Center for Disease Causation.
Ah, that's very accurate then.
Yeah, they do a lot of other things. We were talking about mercury, and the CDC is the big push behind injecting children with mercury. And I was at a United Nations meeting in Geneva in January, and a treaty that was just signed. We didn't sign it, of course. We never signed it, but that it was in Minamata Bay, Japan, where they signed a treaty that to worldwide ban, phase out, reduce exposure to mercury. And I was there at 2 o'clock in the morning, and a neonate neurotoxicologist Janet Kern was at the meeting, and she was out in the hallway crying basically, and I went over and talked to her, and she said that she never realized the American government was so evil, and that every single recommendation that our government put into the treaty, we're not going to sign it anyway, we never signed those treaties anyway, but everything we put in there weakened the treaty. And why is she there? Because she knows that mercury harms children, and she's trying to get some kind of protection for the children of the world. And that our government insisted, along with the World Health Organization, which is basically a puppet, that we keep mercury in there so that those poor children in America and Africa can be injected with mercury, continue to be injected with mercury. And, you know, this is just insane. Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Finland, the majority of the people signing that treaty would not allow you to inject their child with mercury. And yet, here our government is insisting that we keep it in there so that we can continue to inject these children with mercury. And it's called vaccination, but it's not
right. Just
vaccines.
Well, didn't they use the excuse that the government was shutting down, and so they pulled the delegates who were supposed to attend that meeting? They pulled them back, said, come on back. We're not going to, you know, we've had a government shutdown, and so we can't send you over there.
Yeah, that's what they said, but they were already there. So, and it cost just as much, cost more to change your ticket to come back if you've ever been overseas. If you go overseas on Tuesday and you're supposed to come back on Friday, but you want to come back on Thursday, you're going to cough up more to come back on Thursday, lots more. So they ended up spending more to withdraw our people than they would have if they just let it ride. So
wow. You
can see what they're saying. But their actions speak louder than words.
Indeed. Well, fluoride is in so many things. Now, obviously, it's in toothpaste, and on the bottom of or on the back of the toothpaste label, if you buy toothpaste with fluoride in it, it has a warning label that if you swallow any, to call the Center for Disease Control or some local organization. Poison Control Center. I mean, that should tell anybody that it is a dangerous ingredient.
It is a dangerous ingredient, and they didn't put that on there when the toothpaste came out in 1960. They put that on there in 1997, and it specifically says a pea-sized amount. And that the reason they put it on there in 1997 is that the Center for the Poison Control Centers of the United States, and there's only half the states have poison control centers, we're getting 10,000 calls a year from parents who wanted to know why their child was sick. And that, you know, these children were accidentally ingesting toothpaste. And if you look at the commercial that had, when I think of the old commercial for Stripe toothpaste, it looked like a Dairy Queen. You know, it's a big fat roll of toothpaste on this tube with a little dairy flip on it. They're supposed to use a half of a pea-sized drop. That means you can barely see it on the bristles. And yet, And that's if you like this stuff. What if I invented a lead toothpaste? Would you have your child start brushing with it? Oh, it's safe because the children will spit out. No, don't put poison things in children's mouths because they absorb and they get swallowed. But you know, that it doesn't make any sense to give a child a deadly poison to brush with. The other things that you're, like your grand, and I tell people, if you can't put it in the cookies, you shouldn't put it in the child's mouth. And so, you know, if baking soda can be used, it neutralizes acid. If you just used a dry brush, I try to get schools to do this, and where they do, it works wonderfully, is that if every child in every school in the United States received a toothbrush every quarter, and they got a new toothbrush every quarter, that'd cost 40 cents a year. Oh, my. And then they could brush in class, and they could knock the scum off their teeth, because they may not be doing it at home if they are not being well-parented. But they don't need fluoride. They don't. All they need to do is knock the scum off the teeth. If you look at where cavities occur, it occurs where people don't knock the scum off the teeth. Scum is what's causing the tooth decay. Well, you feed the scum sugars, the scum makes acid and eats a hole in the tooth. Well, it's bad nutrition. Well, we can't address that because we don't want the kids to quit going to the junk food stores. So it's bad nutrition and bad hygiene. Oh, we've got toothbrushes that don't work. We've got, you know, too many bristles, too stiff, and too expensive. I mean, you know, the simple little bass brush, I remember the Navy used to buy them for 10 cents a piece. I'm sure the government could probably get the price jacked up to $100 a piece, but, you know, the United States Navy used to purchase them for a dime a piece. So, you know, if you can make a decent toothbrush for a dime a piece with the nylon bristles that are soft and polished end, then you can basically, every child in the entire educational system of the United States from Head Start on should have one in their hand and start their day by knocking the scum off their teeth. That would knock tooth decay down 100, 200, 500%. It's a wonderful way to make children healthy, because in old people, it'll actually knock down pneumonia. There's a study of geriatric care, and that the scummier the senior's teeth are, the more likely they are to die of pneumonia. So, you know, hey, let's get a clue. It's good to have a clean mouth.
Well, don't a lot of diseases and a lot of health issues begin in the mouth? And I know that that people who have, for instance, if you have a false joint in your body or something, you have to have antibiotics before you go to the dentist, because germs will go to the most vulnerable part of your body. And when a dentist is working on you, say cleaning your teeth or whatever, those germs will travel throughout your body, getting into the bloodstream and cause you other problems, correct?
That's absolutely correct. And you know, even if you don't have anybody working on your teeth, if you have gum disease and chew, that the movement of the teeth and so forth will knock bacteria in the bloodstream and affect you that way. So, you know, there's a systemic disease caused by oral infection. Was a 2000 review by I can't pronounce the guy's name. Lee is the last name, L-I, but anyway, in that the review published in the Oral Infections and Microbiology, in that review, that there is a whole host of diseases, everything from cardiovascular disease, they get into the bloodstream, they cause low birth weight, diabetes, bacterial pneumonia, infective endocarditis, you know, the list goes on, of even joint inflammation and stuff like that. So, you know, there's huge amounts of data showing that it's bad to have an infected mouth, it's good to have a healthy one. And yet, there's very little money spent in dentistry, on preventive dentistry. I have a couple of YouTube videos. One's called A Recipe for Oral Health, and the other is called Bad Bugs, which is kind of a lighthearted look at the germs that live around our teeth. And I've had a microscope. I saw them every day. Every patient that I ever examined, I always examined the microflora of the mouth, because that's important. And we could change it. We could completely change from the pathogenic microflora to a benign microflora in a space of just a few weeks. And it lasted, except I did have some failures, and you learn from your failures. There was one lady who was elderly, and we cleaned her up, and then she came back in 3 months, and it was infected again. We cleaned her up and came back in 3 months, infected again. So I asked her about her husband, and she said, oh, he died years ago. And I said, are you dating anybody? And she said, no. And I said, do you have any pets? And she said, well, I have my little Pookie dog.
And I said,
you let the dog kiss you in the mouth?
So when
we got the dog to keep his tongue in his own mouth, then we cleaned her up and she stayed clean. And there's actually DNA testing from a study in Sweden that shows that the bacteria come from your mother or your lover or your dog. But nobody's done a study on cats. I haven't seen cats, but I don't think cats are that friendly.
Well, I kiss my cat on the top of the head. And that's,
there you go.
I figured that's safe.
Well, it might not be. There are little things that cats carry.
I don't lick my cat on the top of the head. I just kiss him.
Just pat him on the head. I think he's going to
see you. Okay.
The surfers out in California have a very common parasite because every time it rains, all the cat dew washes in the ocean, and the people that can't wait for a day or two to let the salt water disinfect the debris run out there, and they carry a little parasite with them. But it's the world of bugs.
Goodness. Well, coconut oil, baking soda, salt usually makes the best toothpaste, and it's a very
acceptable toothpaste. You can eat all of those ingredients. The other ingredient that I have been telling people to put into their mix is iodine. Iodine's an essential nutrient. Don't get the kind that you put on a Band-Aid. Get the kind that you can eat. It's called Lugol's. And any health food store will have it. And then if you put some of that in, iodine is very antibacterial. Well, so instead of using a deadly poison like fluoride, why don't we use a desperately needed nutrient like iodine? And then you can tell the kid to spit it out. You could use a great gob of it and then just say spit it out, because if any of it goes down, it's just going to make the kid healthier and also some evidence of smarter. So children that have perfectly functioning thyroids are among the most intelligent children in your class. Well, how do you get a perfectly functioning thyroid? You give it all the nutrients it needs, which is good food and iodine. And that's what makes the brain grow to its normal intelligent quotient. So it's important, I think, for people to understand is it what you put in your body has a profound impact on how that body is going to function. And that if you even look at how the dentists now claim that fluoride might possibly on a good day reduce tooth decay, they are now claiming that the effects are topical on the bacteria themselves and that they cause the bacteria to not be able to produce acid. They do this because it inhibits the ability of the bacterium to make energy. Well, that ability to make energy in a bacterium is exactly the same set of enzymes. That's how we learned how humans do it, is that they took bacteria and they analyzed how they're generating energy, and that the enzyme systems in bacteria are what we use, and that fluoride inhibits the exact same systems in our bodies too. So you get people that have chronic fatigue, and they say, oh, I just don't have energy at all. Well, let's see, are you using a fluoridated toothpaste? Oh, yes, I am. Okay, do you take any iodine? No, I don't. Well, you know, your body's running out of gas, just like the bacteria in the mouth are running out of gas. They don't have the ability to create energy because they're being poisoned. Well, you know, just because you poison the bacteria doesn't mean that it's going to die. Whereas the iodine actually kills the bacteria. The fluoride just inhibits its ability to generate energy, so that the minute you quit doing that, it takes maybe 20, 30 minutes for you to swallow the fluoride that's in your saliva, and then all of a sudden, you know, the bacteria go back to producing their acid, and, you know, eat some sugar or something like that, and they rot your teeth away. So it's better to kill them. I'd rather
Absolutely.
Kill them than just make them sick.
Right. Now, in your book, you talk about using the microscope with all of your patients, and I thought that is so wonderful that you do that, and I don't think that every dentist would do that. And you also talk about the various toothbrushes that are available, and you gave, in the back of your book, you gave suppliers. And I was just very impressed with some of the ideas, the tactics, and the methods to use, even in brushing and in rinsing out your mouth and having a water pick, and you just give so much instruction. I was so impressed with your book. It's incredible. I hope that everybody will will get a copy and use those methods. Now, you mentioned some diseases. What you mentioned?
Diabetes, low birth weight babies, bacterial pneumonia.
Yeah, just right. Everything it has a simple remedy, and yet if you go to the doctor and say, "Oh, I'm just tired. I don't have any energy," then they want to give you some prescription that probably has side effects that will make you feel even worse.
Well, undoubtedly, I think the prescription drugs kill far more people annually in this country, taken as directed, than street drugs. So I think the fourth leading cause of death, something I read recently, was prescription drugs taken as prescribed. And then street drugs are getting about 10% of the mortality in this country. So we should have a war on drugs, but the war on drugs should be against prescription drugs. And the doctors need to learn how to heal. And instead of, you mentioned the fact that not every dentist will take a microscope and look at the bugs. And I understand that. You know, if you're in an office by yourself, as I was, that you're the only person that fixes anything. That the problem comes because the dentists themselves have inhibited every single effort by legislatures to expand the practice of dentistry. It does not take a rocket scientist to floss and brush teeth. That is not a procedure that has to be done by somebody with an 8-year degree. You wouldn't expect your pediatrician to come in and show you how to wash your rear end, that you'd get, a nurse or somebody would teach you how to do that. Well, these are auxiliaries. Dentistry is not allowed. Dentists are not allowed to use auxiliaries because of the jealous protection of their income flow that the dental trade associations fight. Everything that allows you to make an expanded function auxiliary, or they make it so big a hurdle that you've got to go to school for, 2 years or something so you can make minimum wage, and that there are many ways that we could expand the practice of dentistry into schools, have school nurses trained to provide hygiene instruction, show the basic fundamentals of how to kill bugs. It doesn't take a $10,000 microscope like I had to look at these bugs. That the first guy to ever invent a microscope, von Leeuwenhoek, a Dutchman, and he was able to invent a microscope by taking a telescope and putting it together backwards so he could see stuff close instead of far away. And he took gooks in his own mouth and looked at it, and he said, "Oh, animalcules. They're animals, but they're small, so you call them animalcules." And then he threw salt on the slide, and they all died. And he said, "Oh, people should brush with salt." That's over 300 years ago. So we can teach people to look. And the reason I want you to look at the bugs is that I had a very long learning curve on this. Is that Paul Kise was talking about looking at the bugs in the late 70s, and I was too cheap to buy a microscope. And so finally my old friend Jim Knott, who would jump right on it and got a microscope, said, "Kennedy, you need to look at the bugs." "No, no, I can tell by looking at the gums and this and that and this and that." And I was wrong, because he brought over his dad's old Zeiss microscope from the 30s and set it up, and he says, "Look at the bugs." And so I looked at the bugs, and some of the people I thought were well were not. And so I decided at that point that I probably needed a decent microscope, because if you can't eyeball the results, then you need to have a tool. And that's a very simple tool. It costs almost less than any other tool in the dental office, but it provides the most information about gum disease. And gum disease is the principal reason for people to lose their teeth. Is tooth decay is boring. Is it tooth decay you can measure with a test tube. There's a little test called Caries Check that if every kid that went to school, first day of school, is spit in this tube and then set it in a nice warm box for the next 48 hours, the kids that had a tube that turned purple should go in and have the school nurse paint their teeth with iodine to kill off the germs, because the reason it turns purple is they got a bug called strep mutans. And that's called targeted therapy. You figure out one out of five children have that bug. Well, fine. Why don't we get rid of that bug in one out of five children? Then they don't have that bug, and then they don't have that tooth decay. And then we don't have the trouble with the mercury fillings and the drilling and the expense and all that stuff. You just simply identify the kids that are at risk and fix it. This is not rocket science. But we get foot dragging on the part of the people who make money from treating disease. It's not that hard to figure out. There are lots of germs in the world. Some of them good, some of them bad. You kill the bad ones and keep the good ones.
Exactly. Somebody in the chat room just said, he has got a great bedside presentation. I can see him smiling, his smiling, reassuring face as I listen. And I agree.
Must be clairvoyant.
Well, you mentioned the American Dental Association, and you said it was a trade association, which means that they want to protect the profits, right?
They were dismissed from a lawsuit against them in California years ago. It was 94. And Dr. Tolhurst sued the ADA because he got poisoned with mercury from his fillings and diagnosed by Stanford. So it's not a question of did he have mercury poisoning from his fillings or not. He was diagnosed by Stanford, so there's really no question. And they wanted out of that lawsuit really badly. So what they said was, we owe no duty of care to the public. We're a trade association. We represent the industry. We represent the interests of the industry, not the public. And the public is represented by government agencies, and we're not a government agency, and that we owe no duty of care to the public. And they got dismissed. So when people say, it's recommended by the ADA, then I say, you know what? The National Rifle Association recommends we all have a rifle. The National Truckers Association recommends we ship stuff by trucks, and the American Airlines recommends we fly people by air. It's not surprising that they're recommending something that's beneficial to them. It's exactly what every other trade association does. That doesn't mean that we have to say, okay, fine, it's recommended, because that's not what they've been able to do, though, is they've been able to wrap themselves up as a quasi-government entity. So people think that they are somehow related to the government. They're not. They're related to the money-making business is what they are.
Sure. And you could say the same thing about the American Medical Association. And another guest that I have on very frequently, Dr. Jennifer Daniel, says that at least 860,000 people a year are killed by the standard of care.
Standard of care is to protect the doctor. It's not to protect the patient. If all the doctors went around and stabbed their patients in the back, that would be the standard of care. Well, all the doctors are doing it. It's got to be okay, right? It's not a protection of the patient. It actually has the effect of inhibiting the progress of medicine. I know a physician in one of the states that was attacked by the medical board because she would not prescribe fluoride for the children in a non-Florida community. And I got word of it, and she asked for some help, and so I furnished her the documents that showed that the fluoride tablets that are prescription tablets are not FDA approved. The FDA has already reissued in 75, a regulatory letter that said take these off the market. There's no evidence of benefit as prescribed or directed in the labeling. So you can't be guilty of malpractice for not prescribing an unapproved drug. And the board rolled over and went away. But, what insanity. You're going to attack a physician for not prescribing a deadly poison for her patients. That's how they keep the sheep in line, is that people who have less courage than they should will roll over for organizations, the medical board, the dental board, who have tremendous power. But they don't carry with it that obligation to make sure that they use their power reasonably and in the best interest of the public.
Sure. And some doctors have even lost their licenses for going against the standard of care. But getting back to the microscope and pouring salt on those germs, those little bugs, that is fascinating. And then you talked about salt water, that the surfers couldn't wait to get out into the ocean, and that they would pick up these little parasites or bugs or whatever. And so salt is something that is very good to gargle with. I mean, if you're developing a cold or something like that, the old remedy for sore throats was to gargle with salt water.
The bug that causes the bad heart, it's called a beta hemolytic strep, but it's a strep, and strep bacteria can't stand salt. So the old home remedy of gargling with salt or was basically to try to ward off the worst of all possible bugs, which you could get a scarlet fever is what that caused. And so that's a good remedy. It may not work every time, but we certainly doesn't hurt as a preventive measure either. So and it works really well in the water pick, except when you use it in the water pick, you've got to rinse it out afterwards. I've had, if you take your outboard motor and drive around the ocean for a while, it uses the salt water as its coolant. If you don't come home and hook fresh water to it, it'll ruin your motor. So it's good to rinse your water pick out after you're through running the salt through it.
Sure.
Just a little warning.
Sure. Absolutely. I got a water pick after the first time that I heard your after the first time that you were on the program, and why didn't I get one before? I mean, I have a battery operated toothbrush, and I floss every day religiously, and do all of those things, and I also use the toothpaste that you recommend. Or I use baking powder mixed with a little bit of salt. I also have peroxide in my medicine cabinet. And wouldn't dream of using fluoride or ingesting fluoride in whether it's water or juice or whatever. So I've learned a lot from you, and I'm very grateful for the things that you've taught me, both on the program and through your book. What about somebody mentioned coconut oil earlier in the chat room? I also do oil pulling, which is just take a tablespoon or a teaspoon of coconut oil and just gargle it around, swish it around in your mouth for about 20 minutes, and then expel it. And that is supposed to pull the bacteria out of your mouth, which I think is a pretty good thing to do every morning. Have you ever?
I think the basis is that bacteria bacteria don't have noses, so they breathe through their membranes, through the lipid membrane. And I think that if you're doing oil pulling, I think the basis, and I haven't done a lot of studies on this, but I think the basis is the membrane gets coated with oil, and so that they basically can't get any nutrients in or oxygen in. And so the oil is antibacterial. If you pump oil out of the bottom of the earth that's been down there for 1,000 years, there are certain kind of bacteria that eat oil, but they're not the ones that eat gums. So it's another method of disinfecting the mouth. You probably got sparkly teeth. It sounds like you're doing everything I recommend.
Yeah, I am. I really am. I've only had one tooth pulled. I have all my original. I didn't ever get any wisdom teeth, which I'm not sure why, but
you got out of line and they're passing out teeth.
I guess I did. Well, I don't think I have enough room, but I know that even if you don't have enough room for wisdom teeth, if they erupt, then you're going to get impacted it's going to be a problem. Everybody I've ever known that got wisdom teeth had to have them out.
I have to direct you to the research of Weston Price. Is it Dr. Price took over 10,000 photographs and examined thousands of skulls of ancient man, and that basically the impacted wisdom tooth is a problem with the modern man. It did not exist. You can go into any museum in any part of the world, and if you find somebody that's got an impacted wisdom tooth, then you've got somebody that is either malnourished or was fairly modern. By the time, by 5,000 years ago, white flour, white sugar, refined grains are basically not as nutritious as, the stuff that you hunter-gatherers are eating. And so if you dig up a North American Indian who was living on a native diet, they have absolutely 32 perfect teeth, and they may have worn them out. I have some slides of teeth that were worn completely down to nothing, and by the time they were 35 or 40 years old, but that the decay was not a problem and the impacted wisdom is not a problem. In China, when we did our documentary there in 99, is that the only place that we saw crooked teeth were in the high fluoride villages. And by saying high, some areas in the United States are higher than the 4 parts per million place that we went to. But the fluoride damages the way the mouth grows. So just using a fluoridated toothpaste in a child, the child gets exposed, the bone, the growth centers of the bone get inhibited. Fluoride sticks in the bone. It inhibits the growth centers. And so that's why you get all manner of diseases associated with fluoride and bone growth, because fluoride it damages anything. It's made out of, you know, calcium and magnesium, and that's bones and teeth, and that's what it seeks out and damages. So just growth and development in the mouth is why you get so many people with impacted teeth. They think as our brain gets bigger, our mouth gets smaller, but if you look at the old guys, you know, they have giant mouths and not that big a brain, and as the brain comes downward and forward, that it crowds the mouth. But nutritionally, is that if you have adequate nutrition, your genes will give you room for your teeth, and it's not a question of mother's mouth and daddy's genes or something like that. It really is a question of growth and development, and that's what Western Price showed very, very clearly in his you couldn't do it today because the there's so much junk food widespread worldwide, but he did a survey of the world. He basically traveled around the world, drug his wife along with him. She's a good help, kept notes, and they took pictures and basically showed that where the trading posts were, where the locals, we were getting white sugar and flour from the merchants, rotted teeth, crooked mouths, you know, cramped and narrow arches, and that if you went back into the woods where, you know, you're too far away for them to travel in a day to a market, perfectly straight teeth, and that's no toothache at all, and that's what they found by surveying native people on this planet, you know, almost 100 years ago now, but that we've got so much processed food and junk food and food that's devoid of nutritional value, that you end up with children that have funny looking arches. Then you add fluoride on top of that. Is it fluoride, according to the ATSDR, that the subsets of the population are unusually susceptible to the toxic effects of fluoride, and these include the malnourished, people who are over 50 years old, and people with deficiency of calcium, magnesium, and vitamin C, and protein. So that, who is that? That's all the poor people. Is it anybody right that doesn't have, you know, bucks to burn is going to buy, end up eating junk food? You know, they end up with their minimum calorie intake is the cheapest calorie intake, and that's, you know, white flour, white sugar.
Sure. Now, Weston Price was a dentist, and I have read his findings, and I also pretty much stick to the diet recommendation, his diet recommendations. I don't eat white sugar, white flour. I don't eat any grain anymore. I went off grain a couple of years ago, and I really think that I feel a difference.
You know, and there is a lot of evidence that we need to get back to a fundamental diet, you know, and that fundamental diet is not something that comes out of a box or a can. But you know, people say, "Well, I'm too busy to prepare my own food." I understand. You know, what we need. We went to Berkeley the other day, and we were all meeting at a restaurant named Slow, and somebody said, "Well, what a funny name for a restaurant." And I said, no, it's the difference between fast food, this is the slow food. And everything was delicious and well prepared, and you know, and they weren't very slow in getting it out. It took them a few minutes to cook the stuff up, but they didn't microwave it. They cooked it. They actually prepared it there and brought it out. So anyway, Slow, it was a good restaurant in Berkeley. Tried.
Sure. Well, who would want to use a microwave anyway? I don't use a microwave.
It just ruins everything. It's stupid.
Absolutely.
I was a judge of a science contest. You know, the grade schools and high schools compete in a science contest. And there's a houseplant called a Creeping Charlie, which is, you know, it anybody can grow it. I just put water on it every now and then, and it'll take over the house. And one young girl, 10 years old, she'd taken 10 sprigs of the Creeping Charlie and rooted them and planted them in 10 little pots. And then she watered half of them with tap water straight out of the faucet. This is before San Diego had fluoride, but anyway. And tap water straight out of the faucet and put water on those 10, those five Creeping Charlies. And five of them she'd watered with the exact same water, only she microwaved that for enough to make it boil for a minute or two, and then let it cool. And, you know, it was not hot water. It was room temperature water for both of them. And so the ones that got the microwave water looked terrible. And the ones that got the tap water looked fine. They were big, beautiful green plants, and they had, you know, gone from, you know, she had pictures of when she started, and they all had, you know, like three or four leaves apiece. And the ones that were microwave water had, you know, like lost one or two leaves, and they were down to one wilted leaf left. And the ones on the other had, you know, six, eight, ten leaves, and they were doing great. So, and this was like a 10-week experiment. It wasn't a great long experiment, but just the process of heating that water in a microwave left it devastated plants. So, you know, if you want to look like one of those poor old withered Creeping Charlies, be sure and microwave all your food.
Exactly. And of course, I heard a story about a nurse that put a bag of plasma that was going to be used for a transfusion in a microwave oven to just heat it up a bit, and the patient died.
Yep. It breaks all the proteins up. Is it, you know, you're blasting it with energy. People used to refer to microwaving stuff as nuking it. So you're taking an energy particle and blasting it through the food. That's what warms it up. Well, that's a terrible thing to do to food.
Sure.
We get nutrients from our foods. We get not just the minerals and the calories. So when you microwave food, you remove all the nutrients. You break up all the enzymes so that there's no longer any nutritional value to it, but you still got the caloric value. So you can get big and fat and sick. Oh, great. That's just exactly like America today. So don't microwave the food. I'd rather
certainly
eat cold.
Sure. And when people are devoid of all these vitamins, they are going to be hungry, and so they are going to eat a lot of useless food and get fat.
And then we expose their bodies to fluoride through a government program. And it's not coming from the dentist, although the dentists are going to get blamed for it. The problem is actually coming from Washington, D.C. But they end up exposed to an enormous amount of fluoride. And you know, the proper dose of fluoride is zero. That's spelled with a Z, Z-E-R-O, that there's no requirement in the human body for any amount of fluoride. And so whenever you're exposed to any fluoride, it detracts from something. So if you were exposed to no fluoride at all, you'd be fine. But the more fluoride you're exposed to, the more it suppresses the thyroid. The thyroid affects intelligence. It affects energy. It affects metabolism. It affects so many different aspects of the body that it makes no sense at all for the government to sponsor a program to damage an essential organ, endocrine system, in the human body. And you don't have to take my word for it. You can go get a copy of the National Academies of Science review of fluoride in 2006. This is the definitive scientific document. Read up the chapter on endocrine. Read up the chapter on neurological. And that it's very clear that we're damaging the brains of the people, and we're damaging the thyroids and the endocrine systems of the population of the United States. And you just have to look out the door to see what it's doing to us.
Sure. And there's so many people who are on thyroid medication, and in fact, it's the only medication that I take, and I was diagnosed about 10 years ago with hypothyroidism, which is underactive, and I've been on this medication. I'm trying to wean myself off. I take iodorol every day, have been for probably 5 years. And I still have the dry skin, and I still have some of the conditions that I complained about initially. And so the medication certainly hasn't done me any good. And yet, when a doctor puts you on this medication, they say, oh, you're going to take this for the rest of your life. Well, that's just a profit for the pharmaceutical industry. And there are so many people on thyroid medication, and I'm certain that it probably isn't doing any good, except
there's
for...
Different kinds of thyroid medication. There's one called Synthroid, which is a pharmaceutical thyroid. And then there's the natural thyroid, which is extracted from animals that are slaughtered. We don't recommend the Synthroid. We recommend the natural form. And that there is a technique called the Broda-Barnes technique, and it's written up years ago on how you can measure your thyroid function by taking your armpit temperature at the crack of dawn. The minute you wake up in the morning, you measure your axillary temperature, and it should be well, you're normally 98.6, and I think normal is 97.6 in your armpit. And so that you basically should take nutrients that nourish your thyroid to the point where your axillary temperature is normal. And that, because you're, like I said, thyroid determines your energy level. And so if your cold hands, cold feet are the typical symptoms of an underfunctioning thyroid, and that when your thyroid starts metabolizing the food properly, then you end up with a normal axillary temperature. The reason I say first thing in the morning is that anybody that's ever, you know, ridden a bicycle or gone to work out knows that that raises your body temperature. So you want to raise your, you want to measure your basal temperature. What is it like after lying down for 8 hours? That's your baseline temperature. You get before you jump out of bed and go out and start doing things and moving muscles, which generates energy. Measured right then. Crack it on.
Yeah, I did that. I did that for about a week.
Keep doing it. It'll give you an idea of where you are with your stimulating your thyroid to go back to doing what it's supposed to do. Everybody's thyroid is supposed to work. Everybody's thyroid, you know, I believe that the human body is supposed to function properly. That's the bottom line, is it's supposed to function properly. And when it's not, what you do is you go out and investigate why it's not working right and put all the parts out in front of it so it can put itself back together. It's like, if you had a computer that didn't work real well, is that if it was a human body, what you do is you go get a bunch of silicone and some wires and some copper and some little circuit boards, and you just put them out in front of it, and the computer would absorb them and put them back where they belong. Is that that's what your body does? It's really an amazingly beautiful system. It will heal. It will fix itself if you give it the proper nutrients, and that's you got to take away the poisons and provide the nutrients. You got to get rid of the fluoride, the mercury, the lead, the radiation, the cadmium, and then you put the proper nutrients in front of it, the iodine, the balanced nutritional products, the foods that, you know, like Western Price recommends or Max Gerson recommended, and then the body will put itself back together.
Right. Now, I don't know that you can overdose on iodine.
There are people who have tried to. There was an attempt to murder a fellow with iodine. It didn't work. So you probably can take too much, but, you know, it doesn't kill you. Sherry Tenpenny has a web site. Tenpenny, she's a DO. She's a doctor of osteopathy. And she's real big on women using iodine to improve their breast health. Is that we have all of these people walking around with pink ribbons and they, oh, gee, we got this breast cancer epidemic and so forth. And instead of saying, gee, that's not normal, what's causing the breast cancer epidemic, they go around saying, oh, we need to raise funds. No, we know what's causing the breast cancer epidemic. And so what we need to do is to stop causing the epidemic rather than, you know, raise funds. We apply the knowledge we already have that iodine is essential for a woman's breast health. And it's essential actually for every cell in every human's body. Every cell in every human body has multiple receptors for iodine. It's an essential nutrient. It is very important, not just for your thyroid, but for cellular function. When you're exposed to bromine, which is now in the bread, and chlorine, which is in almost all the water, then you inhibit the thyroid, and you also inhibit the iodine. So we got the double whammy. One, we've got a deficiency in iodine in our diet, nationwide. Even with iodized salt, it's not enough, and it's the wrong way to deliver it. We're trying not to eat salt anyway, so it's a nice idea, but it didn't work out. And so we've got a gross overdose of chlorine, and a gross overdose of bromine, and a gross overdose of fluorine. All three of those halogens interfere with the way the iodine works. And so we're taking into our bodies toxins and not enough nutrients. And so the reversal of the diseases they cause is very simple. You figure out where you're getting exposed to the fluorine, chlorine, and bromine, and take in iodine and eliminate the fluorine, chlorine, and bromine. It's fairly logical, I think.
Sure. Sure. Well, I have a water filter under my sink in the kitchen for water, and I try to do all of those things. And,
I know you do, but we're talking about the nation as a whole.
Exactly.
Most people won't go out and buy a $175 reverse osmosis system, and it will lower the amount of fluoride in the water supply. It'll lower the amount of chlorine in the water in your drinking water, but it doesn't fix the shower. And so it doesn't fix the, like if you want to go out to a restaurant and have a cup of coffee, or if you want to go have a pasta, they cook it in the tap water, so you end up with that junk in your food. They need to confess that the standards for water in this country are for industrial water, and this water should be good enough to wash your car with and water the grass, but it is not enough to take into your body as a nutrient. It's not a nutrient quality water, and so they lament all the problems of the plastic bottles piling up. But why are the plastic bottles piling up? It's because people do not trust the water supply. And so I don't trust the water supply. I don't drink the tap water. I got stainless steel and glass bottles I carry around in my car all the time. So if I ever end, I fly from one end of this country to the other, I've got a big 7-gallon jug I bought up at RAI, BPA free, and I take my own water with me wherever I go. It's getting a little heavy for me to haul around, but fortunately when I land at the airport, usually there's some nice young guy that said that big blue thing is real heavy. Bring that along.
Oh goodness. Well, yes, I agree. And it's a matter of education. It's a matter of letting people know. And even if people don't trust the water supply, they still can't accept the fact that the government would intentionally use products in the water in other ingredients. And you talk about that in your video. Now, let's take a 5-minute break. And then when we come back, I want you to talk to us about this fabulous video that you've made, because I think it's very important that everybody in the country view this video and recognize what's going on. So why don't we take a 5-minute break, and then we'll be right back.
we're back.
And we're back. All righty. Okay. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Dr. David Kennedy. He is the author of How to Save Your Teeth, Toxic-Free Preventive Dentistry. The website is fluoridegate.org. And he is the producer of Fluoride Gate, An American Tragedy. And Dave wants to know, why is the fluoride there? And you mentioned profit before. Is there any other reason beside the profit motive?
Can't think of a good one. The big push to put fluoride in the water is coming from paid government employees. These are people that are working for a handsome salary in Washington, D.C. and in every public health department throughout the United States. It is their stated goal to put fluoride in every major water supply in the United States. So that's why it's going on. The fact that that is damaging our health and destroying the nation is not their concern, because they're still making money. And that so I used to say that there were 11 reasons for fluoridation, and money.
Indeed.
It's not about teeth. It's got nothing to do with teeth. And it has to do with hazardous waste disposal. You can tell by the way that they respond to direct questions, and that they manipulate the data and they claim that there's a benefit, but when you actually look at the raw data or data that's not available for manipulation, such as the computer files of states, there's no benefit. So they have the claims, it's beneficial. Who's paying for those studies? That's the government. The government, the National Institute of Dental Research, Craniofacial Research, has paid hundreds of millions of dollars out to researchers. And if you find that it's not beneficial, you'll never get another research, and they won't publish your study. So they manipulate the scientific market. They manipulate the studies. And that's so that they can continue to claim that there's a benefit. There is no benefit for putting fluoride in the water supply. And so the fact that they're damaging our nation is pretty obvious. And even if you just look at their own documents, I often like to use their documents to show what bozos they are. But their Center for Disease Control acknowledges that 40% of the children now have dental fluorosis. Dental fluorosis is the first outward visible sign that a child was overdosed with fluoride during tooth development. Adults don't get dental fluorosis. It is a structural damage to that child's teeth that's permanent, that occurred while the tooth was forming. Because, you know, we were talking earlier about how fluoride inhibits the way that the cells produce energy. It also inhibits every enzyme known to mankind. So it inhibits the metallothionein enzyme that's supposed to take away protein so you can have enamel. And so instead of enamel, you end up with this porous, kind of chalky-looking enamel that picks up stain. And that now is in 40% of the population, according to the Center for Disease Control. If you look at the raw data, it actually indicates it's closer to 70%. And that's because they don't count kids with one tooth damaged. They insist on you having at least two teeth damaged.
In this country, it is that widespread.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
It's
permanent.
You can't avoid it. It is terrible. I'm kind of to the point where I'd like to see some punishment for these people, because they have an oath that you know, when every government employee, when they take a job for the government, they swear to uphold the laws of this nation. And that, you know, here we have the Food and Drug Administration sworn to uphold the laws of this nation. And that 30, 40 years ago, they said that fluoride tablets were not of benefit. And yet we have pharmaceutical companies selling those tablets to American people for the last 40 years that are ineffective. And there's a nice study from Peebles showing that it causes dental fluorosis. Take a tablet of the stuff. So it's not just from the water. You can get it from taking prescription tablets, or you can take it from toothpaste. It absorbs right through your skin. Or you can take it from drinking Coca-Cola that was made in a fluoridated community. It's just so widespread that unless you have a real smart mom that's hunting around to find good clean water for the family and good clean non-processed foods, all processed foods are high in fluoride. because almost all processed foods are made in fluoridated communities. So it's almost impossible to avoid exposure to it. And that, you know, their motivation, I think, is economic. There are conspiracy theorists out there, but, you know, I have trouble believing that the people that bring us crashing websites and bungled weapons of mass destruction have enough smarts to run a major conspiracy. So for 60 years without the something leaking out, where's Mr. Snowden when you need him?
Sure, yeah, exactly.
Emails out of the CDC saying, let's go poison the population.
Yes, well, definitely. But that certainly is what they're doing. And processed foods, drinks, even the concentrates, I mean, the juice concentrates that you buy at the store.
Instant foods. Instant
foods.
Instant coffee. Anything that's made instant.
Cereal.
These cereals is instant. You know, that they took grains, ground them up, and then they dehydrated them. So anything that's instant is going to have lots of fluoride. We measured Cheerios had 10 parts per million, and Fruit Loops was 2.3 parts per million. So we've measured some of the cereals. Lipton instant iced tea, I think when you make it with tap water, gives you about, you know, 4 parts per million. So there's widespread exposure to fluoride. There's no need to expose yourself to more, and there's probably a real good logical reason to avoid exposing yourself to as much as you can.
Sure. Well, tell us about the DVD, the video that you've made, and how many people have seen it, and what the results have been. I know you've educated an awful lot of people, and you interviewed people. It's a fabulous video. I hope that every single person that's listening to this program, live or you know, later on, will look at that video. And that video is available at the website for free. You don't have to buy it to watch it. Fluoridegate.org, and you've done this simply because you want to educate the public. And I think that is so, so good of you. And the name of it is Fluoride Gate, an American Tragedy.
Well, thank you for the for directing your viewers and listeners to Fluoride Gate, because it's had over 1 million views. Joe Mercola sent it out and picked up about 270,000 views in 1 day when it first came out. None of the counters show all the total, because it's on lots of different places. It's on YouTube. Joe Mercola has it on his website. We put it on its own website. The website that you can communicate with me is either YouTube or Fluoridegate. I'm picking up about 20 new subscribers a day on my YouTube channel who watch Fluoridegate, and then they go on to watch How Fluoride Poisons You, or, you know, Bad Bugs, or, you know, and how to save your teeth and that sort of stuff. But it's not a revenue generating thing. I gave all of the DVDs. We've made 3,000 DVDs, and they gave them to the International Academy of Oral Medicine Toxicology, and they take orders and they keep the profits, because I didn't do it to make money. I did it to save my nation. It was like my interpreter and guide in China. When it got all done, I thanked her very profusely for her. She went really over the top to make sure that we got to see what we needed to see and got where we needed to go. And I thanked her profusely, and she just gave a short bow. She says, oh, but it's my duty. And so it's my duty. So to share with my fellow citizens exactly what I see going on here is that if we can avoid damaging one more child because of that movie, that's a good deal. And if we get this stuff out of our water, it's a really good deal. So that would be what my real goal is that we have water that's safe for an infant to drink. And that's the standard. We actually, if you use an infant drinks its weight in water every 3 to 4 days. So if you assume that your infant's going to drink its weight in water every 3 days, you know, how much does the baby weigh? Would baby weigh 8 pounds? Well, 8 pounds is what a quart of water weighs. So that baby's going to drink a quart of water every 3 to 4 days. Oh, no. 8 pounds? 8 pounds a gallon? No, going to drink a gallon of water every 4 days. So they're going to drink a quart a day. And so you should have water that's safe enough that a little tiny baby could drink a quart of it a day and not receive a dose of anything that's dangerous. And that's sadly not the case. in our America today. They try to use things like average intake. Well, you know, the average senior citizen doesn't drink enough water, and the average baby drinks an enormous amount. So, you know, how can you use average? You know, because we're not average. What if you're a marathon runner? You might drink 3 or 4 quarts just in one race. And so, you know, you got to pay attention to the dose of fluoride that people receive. So the dentist can't even answer a question about dose. You say, what dose of fluoride do you recommend? They say 1 part per million. Well, that's not a dose. That's a concentration. To do dose, you have to do weight for weight. And so you need to know how much water they drink and how much they weigh. And that's why they won't answer that question, because when you calculate the dose on an infant grossly exceeds the dose that's known to cause harm. And so that's an unacceptable thing, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you're a noble, wonderful human being. I just want you to know that.
I'm doing my best.
I think you're succeeding. I really do.
Well, a little help from you. I appreciate you spreading the word on your programs and getting the word out, because dentistry is a consumer-driven profession. People complain about it, you know, this way and that way. Nobody wants to, you know, have a toothache or be in pain. And, of course, it costs money. But, you know, the thing that always amazed me was how much it costs to fix teeth. Because when I first started, I set a fee on doing a guy's crown, and the lab was more than I'd charged the guy. I ate the hole, but I did a little more research next time before I came up with a new price for crown. But you can avoid all that. You know, God gives you a perfect set of 32. So, you know, take care of it. It's like everybody got a Ferrari, and you were complaining because your fenders were all bent. Well, you know, I know who drove into the stuff with it. You know,
sure.
Quit diving into the wall. You know, that's bad for the Ferrari.
Sure.
Take care of it.
You mentioned periodontal disease previously, gum disease. And if you brush your teeth correctly and you use the right products, the right brush, and you get rid of the bacteria in your mouth, you're not going to have gum disease.
No, it goes away entirely. You didn't mention the key, though, that it's just like washing your car. You got to brush it, then you got to do something in between the teeth. And you can use a toothpick, depending on how much room you got, or a little proxy brush or floss. Got to do something to stir the bugs up in between the teeth. And then you got to use your water pick. And you got to use something in the water pick that kills bugs. And so it's just like washing your car. You go down, you rub it all over, and then you hose it off. And so people forget to hose it off at the end. And that's because I know this for a fact, because with the microscope, I didn't have to ask them if they were irrigating. I could just look. Is that there are certain organisms, the real nasty ones, are called a spirochete. It looks like a snake. And that if they had snakes, they weren't irrigating. But the snake is a real bad actor. And how do I know that? The snake can't stand anything. It can't even stand oxygen. It can't stand salt. You can kill a snake with 100 different things. Spirochetes cannot stand vast majority of things that are out there, and I'm not in favor of the commercial mouthwash, but, you know, zinc chloride, salt, baking soda, iodine, they can't stand it. They can't even stand oxygen, so, you know, they couldn't stand your oil either. So there's lots of things that kill snake, and if there's spirochetes in there, they're not irrigating, and that the spirochete, you got to get rid of it, because what it eats is blood. So it lives on fibrin, which is a component in whole blood. And so what they do is they end up, it's actually one of the bacteria that we know that can bite. And so it can actually burrow into a red blood cell. It can burrow through the membrane inside the gums. And so when you floss and brush, if you get bleeding, I can't guarantee it, but the vast majority of time, I'm going to find spirochetes. Is it when the gums bleed, there's spirochetes present, is my rule of thumb, and it's not always right, but it's close enough that if you find an area that bleeds, that there are 10 other areas that you didn't touch that would bleed just as much. Is it floss does not go deep into the gums. And I tell people, I said, if you want to get all the spirochetes, if you're going to get them with floss, what you got to do is you got to put a little hook on the end of it and put a little blob of blood, because, and then you got to pull it out about a million times, because they are swimmers, they're fish. And so that they're biting away at your gums for the nutrients they need to stay alive and survive, and they actually build organized places where you don't like smart bacteria, but these bacteria are very smart. And so, if you hit them with a tsunami, they wash away. And so that's exactly what a water pick is. It's a tsunami of fresh water, and then you can add something to it, like a splash of iodine or salt, baking soda. I have a YouTube video called Recipe for Oral Health. It tells you exactly how to make up your own. And then, boom, you've hit all these germs with a tsunami, and they're reacting just like humans that get hit with a tsunami. They don't like it. They wash right down the drain. And so it makes your gums get tough and pink. You can't make them bleed. I can take a soft toothbrush and dig around my gums and anywhere I want to, and there's no blood comes out at all. That's because my gums are nice and healthy, and when I look, there's no spirochetes. And I know I had spirochetes because when I was in dental school, I saw them. I just got rid of them. I killed them off. And I know where I got them. I got them from Mother because she had them too, and Dad too. So Mother
wow.
Mothers and dogs.
Right. Now, what about tartar? The spirochetes, do they build tartar? What creates tartar?
Well, I call them bacterial condominiums. Tartar is actually a precipitation of your saliva. And what's interesting is that once you get your mouth really well, you almost quit forming tartar when you have a really good nutritional diet. So although I can show you, Weston Price showed quite a big blobs of tartar on a lot of teeth, it didn't cause gum disease. Tartar, dentists have been chasing tartar forever. It's not good to have it on the teeth, but it's, because it leaves a rough surface, it's harder to clean. You know, it's like if you're going to sweep a sidewalk, you know, if it's a gravel sidewalk, it's a lot harder to sweep than if it's a paved sidewalk. And so tartar makes it, I call it bacterial condominiums, because, you know, there are lots of holes in there for the bacteria to hide out. But on the other hand, once you get it all cleaned off, if you keep your mouth really clean, it doesn't form again. Or it forms very, very slowly. I know that for 20, 30 years in practice. Is that you could take rapid tartar formers and make them slow tartar formers. You could make slow tartar formers and make them no tartar formers just by getting rid of the bacteria. And it's nutrition and it's bacterial. Tartar's not good for you, but it's not the cause of the disease.
Yeah, they kind of tend to say, well, okay, you're going to have tartar. It's going to grow beneath the gums, and then it will, create your teeth are going to fall out and all that kind of thing.
Well, they're reciting back to you what they learned in school, and the trouble is that what they learn in school is not correct. And that you can't get them to change what they teach in school, but the truth is, tartar. If you ask a series of questions, you can see how incorrect that is. You can ask your dentist what causes gum disease, and they say, "Oh, it's a bacterial infection." Okay, and so if you've got a bacterial infection, what are you doing to get rid of the bacteria? We're going to scrape on the tartar. Okay, so you're going to tear down their house, but you're not going to kill them. I tell you what, if you go in and kill them, then whether or not you tear down the house doesn't make any difference. I've done this 1,000 times. Is it when we go through and disinfect the mouth and we get in the way and we start the program by looking under the microscope so we know what we're after. Sometimes there's one-celled animals and that's a more difficult thing, but when you know what you're after, then you kill it. And then after it's dead, and you at the same time you teach the patient to keep it dead, kill it. And then you look for reinfection, like we talked about the lady with the dog, and you know, there's quite a few husbands got drug in by the nape of the neck when mom didn't want to have any more gum disease, and dad kept reinfecting her. So when you get them cleaned up, it stays cleaned up, and then the gums heal up, and they get nice and pink and firm around the teeth, and then the tartar is actually up above the gum. The tartar, you can flip it off with a Cavitron or a tool of some sort, and because it's dead tartar. It's like a dead reef. You know, it doesn't. It's
right,
no longer
right,
alive,
coral.
And so it dies. It doesn't, and then it very slowly reattaches, if at all. And that's just places where you miss, but it's easy to clean up. But it no longer becomes the. The quest in a biological dentist office is to have a mouth that's free of germs that are associated with disease. They're good germs. and then there's bad germs. And that the ones that are associated with disease, with one exception, which is a bacteria that has a very funny name called Actinomyces accommodans, but with that exception, the ones that cause gum disease all swim. They all move. And so when you look under a microscope, if it looks like a zoo, you know, after the tiger's loose,
right.
Everybody going every which way, then you got an infection. And then if it looks like, you know, a tennis game after all the players are gone, you know, just a few little balls sitting around here and there, you're done. That's
sure.
You're fine. And so it's why I was so slow in getting a microscope, because I thought I could just look at the gums and see, oh, okay, I can tell. But I learned that I can't. You know, that you actually have to look under a microscope, and then you can tell.
Well, that's the difference between you and so many other people, is that you had an open mind. You were willing to reevaluate what you had learned in school, and you've applied what you learned afterwards, and it's to the benefit of your patients. And I'm sure your patients absolutely loved you. Absolutely.
We had a good time. I love dentistry. I don't want to do it. My neck gave out after 30 years, but bending over, looking down and sideways, that's not good for my neck. But anyway, the business of helping people get well is a great business. You know, it's wonderful to help large groups of people be able to find health, and that was the pleasure that I got to do for many years, was to guide people through their out of the. I had a lady attorney who was she was in her late 20s, and she had nightmares with gum surgery, and she said she had problems when she was 17, and they did some surgery, and they did this, and they did that, and she'd just gone to hell with her teeth for, you know, 12 years at that time, and the senior lawyer in the office said, go see my dentist, and she said, and so she said, go see my dentist, and she was full of spirochetes, and, you know, it just wall-to-wall crawl, and she just had her teeth cleaned. Because they didn't kill it,
Really?
They just move the bugs around. If they don't pick up a chemical, iodine or something, and squirt the gums out, then the bugs are going to be right there. She just come from her periodontist and a cleaning, and she comes in and she's full of spirochetes. And so I said, you know, the problem is spirochetes. And she said, well, how do we kill them? And I said, well, that's the program. We're going to kill them. And we did. And she went home and bought a water pick that day, and she was perfect ever since. And then she came in for her final checkup after we had her, you know, totally beautiful. And she said, well, I've infected my son. And I said, well, how old's your son? And she said, he's 5. And I said, nah, those children, they're so healthy and vibrant. They have a tremendous immune system. It would be very unlikely. And she said, could you look? And I said, is he here? And she said, yeah, John. And so I looked. He had a mouthful of spirochetes. And so she had infected her son. And that we treated him one time, and he never had a spirochete again. So it was a pleasure to see the infectious nature of gum disease.
Exactly. Mothers, and what did you treat them with? You treated them with iodine?
Back then I used a product that was called chloramine T. I could have used zinc chloride on the kit. I used a variety of things. I used salt water, chloramine T, zinc chloride, and I didn't really know about iodine until the very end of my clinical practice career. But my hygienist is still cleaning teeth, and she's using iodine to great success. So those are the way you kill them. You just anoint them with something that they don't like. And there's lots of things that are relatively safe. You know, to expose your mouth topically to. And Lynn is my hygienist. She for many years, and I taught a lot of ladies how to do this. And a couple of guys, but Lynn was so good. She could sit there and irrigate with the water pick. You know how water gets flying all everywhere,
Oh, it does, especially if you don't press a button down at the right place. And I mean, first
well,
time
Lynn
I
had
used
a foot
one.
Lynn had a foot controller, but she could go around the mouth with a terrible tasting solution and have a vacuum right on the other side of it, and she could flush the gums out all the way, and the patient would seldom even taste the solution. Zinc chloride isn't real tasty, but you could very easily kill all these germs without having a terrible taste in your mouth, and you get all done. She could take a sample and show you it was just completely bug free, and that was you can train people to do that. I would train a new hygienist to. I would teach him how to, I didn't have to teach him anything except use the microscope, and I said, don't worry about it. I'll do it. Just take a sample for me when you're done killing all the bugs. And that they would take a sample, and it would be full of crawlies. And I'd say, well, you need to kill some more because it's still there. And so they'd go back and work at it. And when they had finally figured out how to kill the bugs, then they were great hygienists. And that was, because it's not how well you scrape the roots, it's how well you kill the bugs. Because the fundamental problem is the bugs.
Amazing. Well, you go ahead.
Well, there is one thing. If we can address the mercury issue.
I wanted to do that. Yes.
Yeah. You cannot legally open the mixing capsule in a dental office. Is it when they make a new mercury filling? And I was just up at Berkeley a couple of 6 weeks ago. And the dentist that ran the welfare clinic there in Berkeley was arguing forcefully that, she couldn't possibly be required by the city of Berkeley to tell her patients that she was using mercury in their mouth every time she wanted to do that, because many of them would not allow her to do that. And so, but she's supposed to tell them anyway. It's the law. So she's arguing that she needs to be able to continue to break the law and not give truthful, informed consent so that she can continue to practice dentistry like she learned years ago in dental school and stuff mercury in children, pregnant women, teenagers, adults, people with neurological diseases. She doesn't want to tell them she's using mercury. So if she's not willing to tell them that she's using mercury and she's willing to stand up in front of City Hall in Berkeley and explain that's why she doesn't want to do it. I don't want to tell them because they would choose something else. We've got a fundamental disconnect between what the dental profession is supposed to be doing and what they are doing. And what I would like to do is that we had a petition before the Occupational Health and Safety. Is it, if you're a dental assistant and you're in an office that uses mercury and you get exposed to mercury, before you're exposed to mercury, your employer is supposed to take you and tell you that you're going to be exposed to mercury and give you an opportunity to read the material safety data sheet from the manufacturers. And then before you're exposed to mercury, they're supposed to give you a mask that filters out mercury. And I don't mean the cloth mask. I mean this is called a Mine Safety Association. It's a big black rubber mask that has two straps in it. They have to be fitted by an industrial hygienist so you don't have any air leaking around the edges, and they have special cartridges that filter out the mercury. If you don't have a mask like that, or better, a respirator, which is like the fireman wears, and a huge vacuum next to the tooth that never leaves the tooth all the time the work is on, another vacuum by the mixer all the time it's being used, and you have nitrile gloves, not latex gloves, and you have every piece of skin on your body covered during any drilling procedure. Those are called work practices and engineering controls. That's the law. You don't have to become poisoned in order to make your employer comply with the law. It's if they're going to use any portion of OSHA law, they have to comply. It's the law. And so what we found was that OSHA will not investigate unless there's a currently employed person who complains, and they can do it anonymously. But they have to, in order to get them to quit drinking coffee and taking golf lessons, to get them out of their office, to come down to your office and measure the amount of mercury you're exposed to exactly at the time you're exposed to it. Is it the University of South Carolina, North Carolina, was dental school, went in on Saturday. We complained, and they went in on Saturday and measured it and said, see, we found low levels. And we said, the law says you have to measure when it's reasonable to assume exposure is likely. And it's not reasonable to assume the lights will be on the weekend. So it's not also reasonable to assume you're going to expose. You got to do it in the very beginning, all the way through the end of the procedure that uses mercury. And when you do that, you find enormous levels. And so they were intentionally trying to fudge the numbers, but we were too smart for them because we knew what they were going to do. But if any of your listeners know somebody who's working in a dental office, it can be the front office lady, it can be the janitor, I don't care. If they're in a dental office and they would like to help us get mercury out of the hands of the dentist, and the dentists are not going to willingly give it up, that the only dentists that have given it up are the ones that did for moral and economic reasons, that if we get a complaint from a currently employed person, OSHA says they will inspect within 2 weeks. And here's what they need to inspect. They need to open up the material safety data sheet book. It's called the HAZCOM or Hazard Communication Book, and look and see how many incidents of mercury exposure have been reported. If you're in an office that uses mercury and there's no entry on the level that you're exposed to, the day they gave you the respirator, what person fitted the respirator for you, when they gave you the gown, these are things you've got to buy. These are things that the employer is required by law to furnish. So you got to give them gowns, gloves, respirator, and cover their hair, and no exposed skin, and then you can, with engineering and work practices and monitoring of the facility, then you can be exposed to mercury. So no measurement, breaking the law. And so if we enforce the law, we can get rid of this terrible material. It doesn't need to be in our dental offices. It doesn't need to be in your mouth. It doesn't need to be in dentistry. And that there are laws that would, if they were properly enforced, you cannot legally mix the material. When you mix the material, I did a video with a guy, it was called The Beautiful Truth, and we measured it was several hundred. And I couldn't even get the sniffer right in the thing because I wasn't sure where it was. But several hundred micrograms, and you can't be over 100 micrograms ever.
Wow.
And so this was several times more than that. So you can basically say, as long as if they're not criminals, they can't use the material. They have to break the law in order to mix the material.
Now, you're talking about amalgam fillings. You're talking about the removal of amalgam fillings. And it is horribly dangerous. And you told me, I think, that 50,000 dentists are still using them, putting them in, while 100,000 are taking them out without really prepping the patient and doing it in very it's dangerous taking them out.
And they're not even protecting themselves, because dentists are not trained to be aware of the fact that mercury is a poison. They're taught that they're using the safe kind. Well, that's ridiculous. It's kind of like, oh, I got a job at the Fujishima Daiichi nuclear plant because it has a safe kind of radiation. Well, there is no safe kind of radiation. What are you, crazy? So this is the kind of junk that they actually call higher education in dentistry. So the dentist does. There's a nice new study by Yale showing that dentists are crazy. They use gobs of, I think, 18 times more neuropsychiatric drugs for, you know, everything from depression to schizophrenia. So think about it. If you look at a profession that has occupational exposure to mercury, and they end up crazy as run-over dogs, what does that say about the general population? How much of the mental illness that we're dealing with in this country is due to the neurotoxins that we find in our water and our toothpaste? Is it? And I'm sad to say that some dentists are actually using fillings that have fluoride in them. So our fillings and our sealants, there's a thing called a varnish. None of those are FDA approved. The FDA has never approved any fluoride-containing substance. They told Congress in 2000. They've never approved any fluoride-containing substance intended to be swallowed. So if you put fluoride-releasing fillings in, show me the approval. They got it for the filling, but they don't have it for the adulteration with the fluoride. The varnish that they put on children's teeth is coprolite, approved for sealing mercury filling so that the tooth doesn't turn gray. And it's not approved with the 50,000 parts per million fluoride in it. So it's really simple that they just need to shape up and follow the law. If we had law-abiding professionals, they would use only FDA-approved products, and that's and they would apply. They would make sure their employees were protected as OSHA demands. And so when they do those two things, you will see fluoride disappear from dental products, and you will see mercury disappear from the dental office. There'll still be the problem of removing a mercury filling, and that I have a video out called Safer Amalgam Removal. It was made about 10 years ago. We're working on a new one. The new one, the people are in spacesuits. This one, they just had the respirators and covered the patient and put giant vacuums all around. But the spacesuit is really what they need to be wearing.
Sure. Now, what is your YouTube channel? How can people find your videos?
Oh, you can get to me either from the Fluoride Gate that you mentioned earlier, or my mm-hmm. YouTube channel is David Kennedy DDS. David Kennedy DDS, all one word, is my YouTube channel, and so I have 40 videos there or something like that.
That every one of my listeners will be, after the program, they're going to run into the restroom, they're going to be brushing their teeth, they're going to be flossing, they're going to be ordering a water pick, they're going to be doing all of these things, getting salt, putting salt and mixing up salt and baking soda in a little container to put in their bathroom. But this mercury, I mean, when you get a mercury filling taken out, you have got to go to a dentist that knows how to do it, is certified, and can do it properly, safely.
I can't be any more forceful about that than you already are. Is it that the removal of the mercury filling is a dangerous procedure, especially if you've been wearing mercury fillings in your teeth so long that you now have a mercury burden. Is it, you know, when you got them in your teeth when you were 5 or 6 or 10, your body was relatively not exposed to mercury, because the biggest, by far, exposure to mercury is from fillings. So the day you got your first filling is when you started building up mercury inside your body. So you get to the point where you're 25 or 35 or something like that, and you're not feeling that good. Oh, maybe it's the mercury. Well, maybe it is. But if you then get a huge bolus dose of mercury, it can push you off the cliff. And I have in one of my videos, we talk about a lady that had a triathlete runner. She's in her 50s, and she was running the marathon, the bicycle, the swimming miles, and so forth. And she thought, well, maybe I should get rid of her mercury fillings. And some dentist drilled them out carelessly, and she got a huge dose of mercury that day, and immediately developed neurological impairment to the point where they diagnosed it as Parkinson's. Parkinson's is a neurological disease. She cannot get out of the wheelchair. She went from being a triathlete to wheelchair bound. And so I'm not saying that's going to happen to everybody. I'm saying there's no reason for that to have happened that time. Is it if somebody comes in your office and they're going to get the mercury fillings removed, that the dentist is obligated to protect their employees, and in doing so, they will also protect that patient. So if they're not OSHA compliant, then if they don't come after you to take your mercury filling out wearing a spacesuit and give you a hose for your nose so you're breathing fresh air and cover your body from one end to the other and your clothing and tell you to go home and wash your clothes, good. But just leave.
Right. I gave my dentist, who I've been going to for a long time, a DVD. It was a couple of years ago. I had a group of dentists and doctors on talking about mercury fillings, and they had a wonderful video. I gave it to him. He rolled his eyes and set it aside. I don't think he's ever watched it. I've talked to him about fluoride. He just does not believe me. So I just can't go to him anymore. He's just, I can't do it.
I just typed in Fluoride Gate on my Google search engine, and I see that Top Documentary Films is it's number one. That's not my channel. Fluoride Gate with Mercola, that's number two. And Fluoride Gate the film is mine, and it's called fluoridegate.org, and that's number three down. And then there's another Fluoride Gate the film, which is another page on that same thing. And then the sixth one down is Fluoride Gate is my YouTube channel. And so if you're Want to know how to find my YouTube channel? Ask Google.
Oh, good. Google has done a good job. Good job. Well, we haven't ever discussed root canals. I'm actually having Dr. Hal Huggins on my RBN program tomorrow, who is going to talk about root canals. Are you familiar with him?
I had one of my videos. I was able to video Dr. Huggins at the Price Pottinger Foundation here in San Diego about a year ago. And he gave a real nice talk, and he's got the equipment to do DNA testing, and he's correct. Root canals are bad. You can quote me on that. And so it's a dead tooth. You know, if you have a dead tree in the forest, that, you know, it fills up with bugs and things eat it, and it's a dead tree. The same thing's true of a tooth, is that when the tooth dies, that it fills up with really bad bacteria. And and they leak what's called an exotoxin. It basically bacteria leak really, really toxic stuff. The stuff is more toxic than botulism. And that spreads out into your systemic system and causes diverse problems, none of which the dentist can treat. So understand, the dentist is a very limited license. Is it that we can treat structures and diseases of the head and neck, oral cavity. So what if an infected tooth causes an infected heart? Nope, you got to go to the cardiologist. What if an infected tooth causes a joint to swell up and no longer function? Oh, you got to go to the arthrologist. And, you know, what if an infected tooth causes a brain damage? Oh, well, then you got to go to the neurologist and see if they got a new brain they can ship you. So the rotten dead teeth, or even healthy, there is no such thing as a healthy dead tooth. It's kind of like a healthy dead person, you know.
Right.
No such thing as a healthy dead tooth. But anyway, dead teeth, not all of them are as toxic. The toxicity is not equal across the board. And the guy that knows that is Professor Boyd Haley, because he basically...
Oh, yeah, he was on my program.
He's a good man and one of my best friends. And Boyd... They had a lab that he set up to measure the amount of toxicity. He had a daughter. I don't know if he told you, he had a daughter that had a bad tooth, and basically figured out it was her problem was coming from that darn tooth. And so he started testing teeth, and had a real nice thing called ALT, affinity labeling technology, and he invented a molecule that would show you that. And very helpful, because you could actually see which ones. But I sent probably 100 teeth then, and about 95% of them were, you know, as toxic as they come, or maybe 90% of them were really toxic, and maybe 5% of them were kind of toxic, and maybe 4 or 5% were down around normal. But it doesn't make any sense, because even that normal tooth that will become toxic later. It's just a dead tooth. It's just waiting to fill up with bacteria and start leaking bad stuff into your body. So Hal will give you a good talk on that. And
sure.
I have a video that people can watch. I think it's on the Price Pottinger. They can ask Google, but Price Pottinger has a... put his video up on their website, so you can become familiar with the nutritional gurus of the world, because that's Weston Price was absolutely correct, and I just managed to find another library for him the other day. Is that they have Dr. Price's library, and they also have Dr. Pottinger's library, and then another person passed away, and they got yet a third library, and their librarian's trying to sort them all out so we can use them as a research. But
fabulous. Now, do you think it's possible to regrow dental enamel or regrow broken teeth? What if somebody came into, or, you know, when you were practicing, came in with a lot of broken teeth? What would you have done?
I had a bartender, a lady that used to open beer bottles with her teeth.
Oh!
She looked kind of like a saw. She had chips off all the corners of her teeth from
doing
that.
Oh, my goodness.
And no, enamel, in order for enamel to be made, it has to be formed underneath the gum. Is that the enamel is formed as the tooth is being made from a little bud. It starts out underneath the gum as a little tooth bud, and then the enamel is formed first, and then with the dentin inside, and then there's a root forms after that. After all of that's done, then the enamel pokes through the gum, And that's when the baby gets fussy, you know, because the tooth is coming through the gum. And that's the bottom line is that once that tooth erupts through the gum, that the organ that formed the enamel in the first place is no longer present. That doesn't mean that that tooth can't get better, because what happens is that, say a cavity starts working away on the tooth, and then you were careless and didn't clean your teeth, and the scum build up. And so now there are areas of the enamel that have been eroded by the acid etching of the bacteria. What if you suddenly get kind of clever and start cleaning it and quit eating sugar? And that what happens then is that there is an enormous amount of healing. Is it the minerals from the saliva fill back in? That enamel will become harder, stronger. I had a wonderful Air Force backseat rider in the A6 Intruder from Vietnam, and he spent 7 years in the Hanoi Hilton, and he had terrible teeth. All of his back molars were full of cavities when he was shot out of the sky in Vietnam. After 7 years of eating nothing but rotten rice and bugs, he was so hungry that he would save rotten rice to entice a bug over as bait, and so he could stay alive. But when I had his x-rays from when he was shot out of the sky, and I have his x-rays when he came into my office the week after he got out of the Hanoi Hilton, and the decay had completely stopped. The nerves in the teeth had receded from the rotted areas. Every tooth in the back of his mouth had all the enamel had broken off. There was nothing but black stubs back there. I tested them. They were all alive. He did not get one root canal. He did not lose one tooth. We put them all back together. The VA paid for it, because if you're in the service, it's a service-related injury. And we put him all back together, and I lost touch with him, but he moved back to Chicago. But it was a pleasure for me to do that for him, and I was just totally amazed that this black dent, which I can look at the old x-rays and see it was, you know, all those teeth would have probably had to be pulled if they had any dental care. It was hard as a rock. It had healed to the point where it was harder than natural. It was just hard as a rock, and I could grind it down. It was not soft or mushy at all. But that's the effect of diet, is that he completely arrested his tooth decay because he had nothing to cause tooth decay. All the bacteria that would normally rot his teeth starved to death. He was close to starving to death. So, but tooth decay stops if you don't feed it sugar.
Interesting. And what about broken teeth?
Broken teeth, bond them. We have the ability with the modern materials, and the naysayers, they've got BPA. No, they don't. And there's some brands that don't even have a compound similar to that. You know, there's a thing called Bis-GMA. There's other kinds of composites. You know, the Diamond Crown's not even similars, but. We have the ability with the tools today to glue plastic composite. Composite is like cement. It's got a filler, which is bearing glass usually, and a binder, which is the composite, the plastic portion of it. And that you can glue that to the tooth harder than the enamel is held together. So if I glued an O-ring on there, to your enamel, and I hooked it to the bumper of my truck, and I drove away real fast and pulled that off your tooth. The underside is not plastic; it's enamel. That actually, you can glue that this composite to a tooth stronger than the enamel is held together by itself, and that means we can heal the teeth and make them as good as normal with bonding. Is that the enamel won't grow back? Like the bartender lady that used to open beer bottles with her teeth, I spent quite a bit of time. She's a pretty lady, but you know, she just got a little carried away, she said, and we bonded all the little corners back on her teeth, and it put her smile back just like she was 17, and she cried. She was so happy. She said, "I'm not opening it." She said, "I'm carrying an opener in my pocket."
Good for her. I can't
Good
imagine
for her.
Doing that.
Took her a little while to figure it out. But anyway, it's actually a wonderful tools that we've had. The first time I used bonding was in 1971 or two. And I saw some of the stuff I'd done clear back, and my niece bicycled herself into the bumper of a car on her way home, And the car was parked, so you know, can't say that it wasn't the driver's
sure.
fault. But anyway, she was a little distracted and ran in there and chipped her two front teeth. And then they don't live here. They were up in San Francisco, and so they took her to the dentist there, and he put these two big, enormous tin cans on her teeth. And the folks had to drive down to see Uncle Dave because she wouldn't leave the house. She said, I'm not going out of the house with these things on my teeth. So she came
sure.
down to Uncle Dave, and I took them off, and we bonded them, and that lasted from the whole time she was 12 till she got married, and I had to take my sanders out and buff them up and put them on again. And we'd have to touch them up about every 10 years. But she's 50 now and still looks beautiful. So what the heck?
Wow. Well, we are just about out of time. I think you're just the best guest. I just really appreciate everything you do, and I'm sure that our listeners love you. Dave said, "Oh, Dave has nothing but praise." He's our producer here today, I just think
you're too complimentary. You're going to get my head too big. No, stop that.
No, seriously, you're a great person, great human being. And
okay, I'm doing my best, and we'll. I really appreciate you giving me the bully pulpit as you have for all your nice programs, and allow us to spread the word about preventive dentistry. We can stop this. We don't have to act like sheep. We can take our country back. The
exactly.
industry should not control the policies of the public health department. It should be controlled
exactly.
by science and medicine. They give lip service to science, but they don't have any science to support this.
Exactly. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
You too.